Hello, everybody. Welcome to Shop Talk Show. This week's show is sponsored by Environments for Humans. Their latest and greatest upcoming conference is the InControlConference.com, coming up at the beginning of December in Honolulu, Hawaii. We'll tell you more about that later. And another conference, if you just can't wait for December, there's one, the BDConf, the Breaking Development Conference, is focused all around, bringing the web beyond the desktop. They call it, so a lot of the talks are based around, kind of admitting that the web is a bigger place than just desktop web browsers these days. That is in Dallas, Texas, September 24th through 26th, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that later. Thanks to our sponsors. Let's kick this thing off.
Welcome to episode 33 of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Tiffer Coyer.
That's correct. Hi, everybody. And this week we have with us a very special guest, Alex King. Thanks for joining us, Alex.
My pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So we, as we do on the show, and when we have a guest on, we it's not an interview show, but we like to know as much as we can about you. Let's talk about Alex for a minute, huh? What's the main thing? Which is a crowd favorite is your business, right?
That's right.
Okay, and are you like the master, the CEO, the president, the founder, the main dude?
Ultimately the buck stops with me. I have the word founder on the business card because CEO of a 15-person team seems a little bit pretentious. Occasionally I do need to use president or something like that on a contract or whatever, but, I'm one member of the team and we've got some great people here.
How many is it? So it's and what is it? It's a business that it does like client work, right? WordPress based for the large part.
Yeah, I mean the vast majority of our business is custom development, solving problems for people. Oftentimes with WordPress, most people, if they've chosen WordPress as a platform for a large project, they'll probably end up talking to us, and we can, help them figure out the right way to build a site, build an integration, extend WordPress in interesting ways, sometimes leveraging some of the products we've built, other times just building stuff from scratch or leveraging tools that other people in the community have built.
Yeah, right on. So it's like above and beyond kind of WordPress work, right? It's not like if somebody needs a blog or whatever, they're kind of, bigger fish.
Yeah, I mean, we've got, I'd say a couple times a year we'll work with a local startup that, we're friends with or something like that. But most of our clients are, larger projects. They're typically outside of Denver where we're based, oftentimes in California or New York, or we even have a couple of clients overseas in Europe.
Yeah, nice. And so client work is a big part of the business. We also have a few products, right, which we'll get to.
Yeah, we've got a couple of different products. The ones that we've been updating most recently are the WordPress products, Carrington Build, which is basically drag and drop layouts to give people editorial control of high value pages on their site. So we'll typically integrate that in for product pages, landing pages for certain areas of the site, the homepage, and it gives them the ability to update the layout, adjust things as necessary without having to bring in a developer to make those changes. And since it's using modules and everything that have consistent CSS class names and styles that have been developed for them, it's really hard for them to make you know, to have their changes make the site look bad.
Awesome. That's called that's Carrington cool. Build. We'll link that up for everybody.
That's Carrington Build, yeah. And then Ramp is our other commercial product, which is basically a solution for how do you get content from a staging environment into a production environment. You guys have talked about it before. Thank you for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we have, and we have so – it's so funny. That's kind of – you know, I'd say the kind of the primary reason we ended up kind of asking you to be on the show is because it is – it's kind of unbelievable how many questions we get that are around that. And I saved a couple of them for the show. Some of them will – you know, as we get to these questions here, you know, we'll just try to do as many as we can. But some of them are like that, you know, I have a feeling that the answer is going to end up being Ramp. So we'll just – you know, if you guys are curious more about that, listen on because – it won't be the last time we mention Ramp.
I think we have 200 questions about how do I stage or develop locally, stage and deploy WordPress. So, and yeah. About 900 of those answers are Ramp, I think. But I'm interested to see what you say in the long run, Alex. But also, Alex, for those who don't know, for you youngsters out there, Alex is basically the guy. If you had a problem with WordPress, he was like writing plugins before plugins were a thing. And he was the guy, if you had a question about WordPress, you had to go to his blog. He's the only blog out there that had information. So a humble thank you from me for helping me out.
Oh, thank you very much.
And still a active blogger. I like your body. It's like little bite-sized nuggets. You almost use it like Twitter a little bit. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's actually something that I've been working hard on my own side. One of the things I think is really cool about WordPress is it allows you to kind of own your own space on the web, own your own data. So I've been, you know, working on my own site to have that be the place that I post first and then pass it on to other social networks.
Yeah. I'm sure will not be a decision you regret. Owning your own data. All right. So, Dave, you put a little hashtag hot drama in here this week. I didn't even realize that.
Well, I do. If you'll indulge me, I'd like to notify our listeners of a very important article written by Robin Bergen of the W3C. She posted it over. It's an article called The Flowing Standard, which says Robin's new to the team, so she's kind of introducing herself and her role and what she's doing. But I'd like to read an excerpt if you guys wouldn't mind. Here it goes. It says, looking at it in terms of rebounds, plot twists, nurtured, healing and abandonment, love and betrayal, strife, toil, stunning victories, dispersions, and last-minute rallies, the only thing that distinguishes HTML's history from a charts-topping teenage fantasy saga seems to be the lack of vampires. And even then, were vampires around, I'm not sure we'd notice them for all the action. I am therefore very excited to join the W3C staff, so she's working there, to work on HTML full-time as part of the HTML editorial team. Congratulations on your new position, Robin. In the hope that I may bring my humble contribution to this living monument. For all of the HTML adventure may be fun to watch with some popcorn, though, one of my hopes is that heading forward, all parties in the HTML community can move towards more effective debates about focused technical issues while resolving sources of dissent. In other words, less drama, more work. Now, I consider this a direct assault on the Shop Talk show. Robin is single-handedly trying to undermine our business model, and I will have none of it. I will have none of it. I am furious.
Less drama, not a good thing for the show.
No. He's trying to take us down, Chris. I don't get it. If the W3C literally wipes out all drama, we're going bankrupt, Chris. This is we're headed towards disaster if this person succeeds. This aggression shall not stand.
So, okay. I don't think it's going to work. I think that People are inherently lean towards drop.
I'm going to make it not work. I'm going to be the thorn in her side. I will. Yes. Good. You heard it here. That's all I got.
I put a couple links in here, but they're boring, and I think we should not do them.
There's some cool stuff. You relaunched your blog.
I did this morning. About it's my CSSTricks.com version 10 has been out for about 2 hours.
Yes. So
that's a big deal. I'm really kind of I'm going on the emotional roller coaster thing. I'll hide it for you guys, but man, it's rough on a day when you launch a site that asks for comments on your design. All the trolls come out, man. They want to insult my lineage and every possible choice that anything that they can be mad at me for. They are mad at me right now. That's okay, though. I can take it. So check it out if you want to and yell at me or don't or whatever. Well, I wanted to do some follow-up from last week. Remember we talked about mobile Safari? And if you go to a website that ends in a .mobi, top-level domain, and we're like, there's no way it ignores the meta viewport tag just because of the top-level domain, it turns out it kind of does. So we were wrong about that, and we'll link that up in the show notes. Actually, I linked it up last week's show notes too, but do you have anything to add about that, Dave?
I don't know, man. Douchebag mobile Safari invents viewport tag, then ignores it. that's all I can say. That's crazy.
It's a meme. All right, let's get into some Q&A. We have a ton of these. Some of them even are just directly at Alex. So let's start with this Evan one, though.
Yeah, the first one's from Evan Huntley. It's an audio question, so here we go.
Hey, guys. Got a WordPress development question for you. With regards to the database, how do you guys keep it in sync when developing locally versus looking at your changes on a server? Are you constantly exporting and importing the database in both places? I've heard of a solution where you can just use one consistent remote database, but that seemed a little bit squirrely to me. What solution do you guys use? I love the show, and thanks for your help.
I thought I'd toss Alex a little softball here on this question.
Yeah, I mean... I guess I can answer it in two ways. I mean, one is, obviously our ramp product will help push content from staging to production. But ramp's not really a developer tool per se. It's more a tool for people that are, they have their own site and they have their own staging environment and they're managing the content of those sites. So maybe they're getting ready to update a product page or release a new product. And part of what they need to do is, create the new pages, mm-hmm. update the home page, and then push all of that stuff up in a batch. And before they push it all up, they want to, do an internal review with people on their team, make sure everybody signs off on it, get revisions, et cetera. So you can do all of that in the staging environment. And then create a batch of just those changes and push those up. And that's what Ramp is really good at. And so in that way, it's much more of a business tool than it is a developer tool.
Sure.
The developer side, I mean, we deal with this all the time. All of the developers on our team work locally. And then we have to, once those... the features or things that they've developed are ready for testing, that gets handed off to QA. Once it's passed through QA, then it gets pushed up for client review. And then, once it's done, it goes live. So there's a bunch of different stages there. So from a development perspective, we've tried to solve this by using local databases for development. And then we have a fixtures database server where once the feature is development complete, the developer will connect to the fixtures server, which is a remote database, and create enough data that exercises all of the features that they just built so that QA has a clean set of data to test with. So that fixtures database only ever has a nice clean set of data that grows over time. And then once it gets up to the staging environment, that might be where a client might start entering content that would then be ramped to production. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think so. It's like you always, like immediately you were like, this ramp is mostly for, and we've talked about it before too, or at least you think of it as from staging to production, not from local to staging or not from local to production. Although you said there's nothing inherent to ramp that prevents that, right? It's just ideologically you think about it as more of a staging to production kind of transfer. Yeah.
There's no technical limitation, but I think that conceptually it doesn't make sense to try to cherry pick out a couple of nuggets from, you know, the mess that happens when you're doing local development to try to push up to staging. And maybe there are exceptions to that. You know, if there's a complex page or something that you're working on and it's taking you a little while to get it the way you want it, I could certainly see that being a situation where you would want to push that from development to staging and then onto production. And ramp will support that. But there is a requirement that all of the environments need to be able to talk to each other. So if you've got a local development environment and you're trying to push to staging, the staging environment also needs to be able to talk back to your local development environment. And that requirement is kind of a high bar for a lot of people.
Is it really? What is that requirement? I don't know about that, I guess. It's some stuff you have to change on the live, you know, on the server.
It's for media transfer. So you say, you know, I want to push up this post that has, you know, these three images attached to it. And so then that's received on the
Permissions need to be such that it allows for that, is the point?
It's just routing, right? So ramp uses the XML RPC interface, mm-hmm. and it's a lot easier for us to say, okay, I'm going to push this from staging to production. Here's the post. Here's the three images, A, B, and C, and pass the URLs, and then have the production environment reach back and request those files and transfer them over by pulling them than it is to transfer them by pushing them. So that's the way it's built at this point.
I see. Yeah, it feels like you're pushing, but it's really, in practice, it's telling something else to pull.
Well, yeah, you push the information up, and then it has a process of pulling it up. Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. So, that's okay. I'm wrapping my head around this. This is cool. So it's really to streamline the staging to production, like for your content. I put it in ramp or in my staging, and then that'll notify my production, hey, there's available pulls that you can get, like almost like a pull request in GitHub or something. And then I just pull that in that content. So did I do that right?
Yeah, it's just the media files that get pulled. Everything else is pushed.
Okay, cool. Yeah, over the XML RPC. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, that's cool. Ingenious.
I think some of the questions that we get, if I can turn this on its head a little bit, are guys a little bit like me, I guess, in that I don't even have a staging server. You know, feel free to slap me on the wrist for that, but the CS, like just being a one-man shop that I manage one site is like – eh, you know, like I just don't even care that much. So I think, it's other people are in that position too. I mean, everything's, you know, version controlled and I push it up and have a deployment system and all that stuff. But I just deploy right to production. It's just a WordPress blog, you know. It's not this like super mission critical app, really. And my dream kind of was that like I could like write a blog post locally, right? And the problem is my database locally is always out of sync, and sometimes that just doesn't matter. Like I have a whole bunch of blog posts locally that I can design around, I can develop around. It doesn't need my local database doesn't need to be exactly perfectly like the live one, but it kind of would be cool if it was, you know, like if it was an exact replica content wise too. So that was kind of dreaming of, and I think other people dream of being able to like just write that blog post locally and then just push it on up when it's ready, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and you can do that for sure. On crowdfavorite.com, we do a combination of things, right? When we're working on new features or new product releases or updating various pages, those will all get set up in our staging environment, and we'll use Ramp to push those over. But if we're publishing a news piece or something like that, that'll just, we'll write that live. We're not going to write in staging and ramp it over. And one of the things that I think is kind of unique to Ramp is that it doesn't require the things to be in sync. You can just push over incremental bits. Now, on my personal site, on alexking.org, I take the same approach, Chris, that you do, that, it's just a blog. I'm just going to publish there directly. I'm not staging anything. And then for my local environment, I just pull down a database backup whenever I want to start doing work and go from there. So I've got the, latest setup for my local development.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, hopefully. Oh, so this is going to come up over and over, and this is going to be a great episode to refer people back to, because we're just going to keep getting this question. I'm going to be like, okay, go to episode 33. All right, let's do a new one.
All right, next we got another audio question from Mark Valencia.
Ooh, one of my Kickstarter backers. Thanks, Mark.
Here we go.
G'day, guys. It's Mark Lee from sunny Brisbane, Australia. Firstly, awesome show, Dave and Chris. Really, really enjoy this podcast. This is a question for Alex. I'm starting the WordPress journey of theme development and freelancing with a focus on WordPress. I'm just looking for some guidance on where to begin. I've started reading the WordPress Codex, and I've got Chris and Jeff's book, Digging into WordPress, but I'm just struggling with the business aspects of it all. I know I should write a business plan and set business-related goals to achieve, but I'm just unsure where to start. Should I be focusing on niche groups or a broader market or a particular industry that I'm interested in? What sort of goals should I be setting? How do I keep myself motivated when things get tough or go wrong? Would you suggest speaking to maybe a mentor or a business coach? Any help you provide would be greatly appreciated. Cheers. Thanks for your time. Oh, P.S., Chris, Dave just bought tickets to In Control, so I'll see you there in December.
Yeah.
Thanks to Shop Talk for the discount voucher. Should give me $100 to get a real quality grass skirt, pretty picked out coconut bra. I don't know what bra size is.
Can't wait. Okay, so Mark's asking kind of what is so he knows how to do WordPress, or he's learning how to start a WordPress business. Alex, do you have any insight into how can he turn doing WordPress into a business or a business plan?
Okay, first I want to start with a parenthetical about his note about reading the Codex and the books. I would say that those are great ways to get started, kind of learning how WordPress works, but you've really got to get in and read the code itself within WordPress to really understand what's going on, because the books and the Codex are always going to lag behind what's actually happening in the code. So I would encourage everybody, if you're interested in understanding how WordPress works or things like that, don't just go to the references, actually dig into the code. The more you familiarize yourself with the code, the easier everything gets for you. So I guess that would be just kind of the first sidebar there. As to how to approach a WordPress-based business, I think that one of the first things you need to figure out is, are you providing products or services? And I don't think that was actually part of the information provided there. But the answers really differ based on that approach. I've done a little bit of both. I would say that our products are more advertisement for our services and showing that we can solve interesting problems than they are a business in and of themselves. I think that the services side of the business is probably a little bit easier to get started on, and it's easier to have a few clients that are going to pay you more money than a whole lot of customers that are each going to pay you a little bit of money. The effort involved in those is quite different. within the WordPress community, I think that it is very much a meritocracy, and you can see that happen every year with people that rise up to become known core contributors in a very short amount of time just by contributing great work. There's a lot of opportunity to solve interesting problems, work with people, and help build a reputation. I think that that reputation can certainly help drive, it's going to help you no matter what type of approach you take on the business side, whether it be products or services. Yeah, guys, totally. Help me out here. How do I refine this in a little bit? Do you have follow-ups to help refine this?
I think he mentioned, like, should he focus on, like, niche markets, or what are like, I don't know, goals or motivation.
I mean, were you like, I don't know. When you were doing CrowdWeber, it was evolving from its beginnings to where it is now. Was the plan all along? Was there a plan, or did it just evolve naturally? Or were you like, I'm going to go for the big fish? Or did it start? You start out with small fish, or you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's been very organic. I ended up deciding to hire somebody because there were a lot of interesting projects coming to me, and I wanted to be involved in more of them than I could do just by myself. So my motivation was purely, that sounds really cool. I want to work on that. I want to work with you guys, but I just don't have time. So I figured that if I brought on a few more people, I wouldn't be able to do all of the development on all of the projects, but I'd at least be able to be involved with them and work with interesting people and help build interesting things. So that was basically the motivation. And it's been a virtuous cycle, right? We did some interesting things. Other people heard about it, come to us with other interesting projects, and they just build upon each other.
Right.
And along the way, you know, we've built a really good team. We've built it really as one big development team. We've got front-end developers and designers. We've got full-stack developers. We've got people that are very savvy in DevOps and scaling. We've got project managers. We've got QA. So I really feel like, you know, this team, we can pretty much do anything that we want, which is great, because when people come to us with an interesting project, the answer is typically, yeah, we can absolutely do that. We've got the right people and we've got the right expertise, and let's go.
Nice.
As far as motivation and like niche groups and verticals, I would definitely encourage people to follow what it is they're most interested in. I think that you're always going to be more passionate about the things that interest you, and that passion rubs off on the people that you're working with, clients or coworkers, as opposed to trying to identify a market and say, oh, I think this is an underserved market or something like that, and getting into it purely for business reasons.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking, Mark. Like, focusing on a niche from the start might be a little weird. Like, maybe you should focus on the thing that you're excited about, and let that niche evolve. You know, if you get a project and then you do a good work on it, you know, maybe let the niche happen later. I think what he was kind of is like, maybe, you know, if I'm going to get into WordPress, maybe I could be the guy who makes WordPress sites for nurses, you know, and then maybe it'd get more work right away because he chose a niche so early. But I think that might be a mistake unless you know you're passionate about nursing or whatever. I think that's
one of the things we've seen is people come to us asking us to solve problems that are similar to problems that we've already solved in the past. So, you know, we've got this site that we want to build with XYZ features, and we saw that you built something over there that already has X feature, so maybe, you know, you'd be a good fit to help us here. So definitely, if you've got an area that you want to work in, I would say the best way to do that work is to do that work and put it out there and let people see that that's something that you're capable of.
Hopefully that was helpful to you, Mark. What do you got, Dave?
Oh, I was going to say, I've seen a few interesting business models, like I know a guy who just does like turnarounds on like development. Like he doesn't do any design. He just does development. And like, it's a pretty sweet business model. I know a guy in town who just does, he just does dentist websites, yeah. Basically. Like he did a few and now he just, that's like all he does. And, you know, that's a niche market. And, I mean, maybe he lucked out is what I would probably say there, but you know, if you're going to choose a niche market, choose a rich one, not nonprofits. That's mm-hmm. my only advice there. I don't know.
I think you have to be realistic about what the expectations are going to be from your customers as well. I don't know if you guys know. I started another WordPress business called WordPress Help Center, WP Help Center.
You did?
Yeah, a couple years ago. Okay. And ran it for about a year and a half and eventually sold it to somebody else. But the goal was what I was seeing is there were lots of people that were emailing me personally, emailing CrowdFavorite, needing small projects turned around quickly. And so, you know, we had independent developers that we knew that we would refer these things out to. And what would typically happen is after 6-8 months, you know, these developers would get a little bit more established and they wouldn't want these small projects anymore, which is great. I mean, it's good that their businesses are evolving and things like that. But what happens then is it's only the people that maybe aren't that good or don't have very much experience that are available to provide this type of quick turn support. Right. And so my thinking was, okay, well, what if we put together something that focused just on this, right? And was able to turn around projects quickly, efficiently, and with high quality, but wouldn't take on anything more than, say, you know, 5K. And so we hired a couple of people, we started this up, and I think one of the main reasons it failed is the business approach I took. I was trying to build it organically the same way CrowdFavorite had grown because that's what I had experience with. So, you know, we got up to 2, 3, 4 people, but the developers were just getting burned out because they were doing double duty. They were also, you know, handling sales and talking to customers and things like that. And the... I think that the approach that would have worked better would have been to hire immediately a team of, say, 8 people, 3 project managers / salespeople and 5 developers, train them up for a few months to make sure that the quality is good and cross-functional and everything, and then go to market with that larger team to be able to take on the capacity necessary to really make it work. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's, you know, one data point of sort of an interesting, you know, different approach.
I can totally see that. Yeah.
There's another another problem that I was trying to solve. So, I mean, there were two reasons why I thought that this was a good idea. One was, you know, I felt like it was something that we could try to give back to the community that was important because I think that everybody should have access to good advice and good development if they're you know, running a WordPress powered site. And then the other was to try to funnel support requests from developers that were doing free plugins, things like that, that couldn't or didn't want to do the support themselves to the Help Center and have a team that could handle those things on a paid basis. Because that was certainly a problem that we were having with our free plugins. So that was kind of my vision for it, but it just didn't pan out the way I'd hoped.
Yeah, interesting. We can learn from Alex's journey here. It's not, but you sold it, you know, and it's still here. So it's somebody's doing okay with it, probably, maybe.
Yeah, I haven't talked to him in a little while, but hopefully it's going well for him.
Yeah, good. Let's do a sponsor real quick. I want to, I think this is the first time they've ever sponsored, but I love doing spots for conferences, especially conferences we're going to be at. This one is called the Breaking Development Conference. So go to the URL bdconf.com/shoptalk. And if you go to /shoptalk, there'll be a little message telling you that you can get $200 off going to this conference just by using that URL. Actually, you have to use a code TXSHOPP, Text Shop, Texas Shop, Shop Talk Show. $200 off. And this conference is all about beyond the desktop, right? Like designing for mobile devices, but not even just mobile, anything where the, you know, anywhere where the web is. Other than and including, I guess, the desktop. It's at the Gaylord Texan in Dallas, Texas on September 24th through 26th. I've been to the Gaylord Palms in Florida, and it's crazy awesome. It's one of those, like, it's like a resort. It's one of those you don't even leave the compound because it's just enormous. There's like a rainforest in the middle of it. It's ridiculous in an awesome way. So that's where this conference is. It would be quite the vacation just to go there. That's September 24th through 26th. All about kind of working on the web for all the devices in the world. I went to one in Florida. It was a great conference. So check that out. Save some money by using that URL. Thank you, Breaking Development, for sponsoring Shop Talk Show. Let's do that one by Matt Edwards. This is one that I should know more about that I embarrassingly don't know enough about.
Yeah, this is one I fail on regularly, so here we go.
Hi, guys. It's Matt from Melbourne, Australia. I've got a WordPress question for you. I was just wondering if you could explain the difference between WP Query and Query Posts and when it's best to use each of them and what are the pros and cons. I put together kind of a news website that's got a couple of different categories, and our front page is displaying the 5 most recent posts in each category using different queries. And I'm just having some trouble at the end of the page with things like if is front page is failing and things like that. So I think I might be using the wrong one. Any light you could shed on this would be great. Thank you very much. Great show.
Just gonna hand that off to Alex.
Yeah, nobody told me there was going to be a test. Good question. Yeah. There's actually a blog post on, might be on the VIP blog or something like that, or one of the automatic contributed sites talking about this very thing. We can probably dig up that URL for the show notes. But the main difference is that Query Posts adjusts the main WP query object, whereas doing new WP queries creates new queries that are independent of that primary one. So if you're using Query Posts, it will pollute is main query, is taxonomy, is category, you know, stuff like that. Whereas doing new WP queries will not, they all work independently. So you definitely want to use new WP query, you know, 90%+ of the time.
Yeah.
If you think you want to use Query Posts, you probably want to use a filter on the query itself rather than using Query Posts.
Which is why you pass the existing query to it, like the right, and then just add more stuff at the end, kind of. Is that what you?
Yeah, you basically want to, if you want to adjust the main query, it's better to get in and adjust the arguments after they've been parsed. So once the arguments are parsed, you can get in and make some additional changes to have it do whatever it is you want it to do, and then it'll just execute based on those parameters that have been set.
Yeah.
There's a couple other things that are good to know about WP Query. One is that when you call like a simple WP Query call for getting, say, the 2 most recent posts, will actually do 5 database queries, and you may or may not need all of those. One of the things that you can turn off is the query to have it go check the calc found rows thing, figure out stuff for pagination, right? If you're only needing 2, you don't need to know about pagination, right? So you can turn that off and save a query right there. If you don't need tags, categories, things like that, you can turn off the queries for to cache the taxonomies for those posts. And if you don't need the post meta, if you're not going to be displaying it, then you can turn off those queries as well and get it down to just two queries, which is a lot more efficient for your site.
And that's with the new WP query?
Yeah, those are all parameters. I know I said to read the code before, but for WP query, you probably want to read the codex. WP query is a little bit of a hairy beast. So, yeah, all of the parameters are well documented there about, you know, it's like update post term cache equals false, update post meta cache equals false, and one other one I don't recall off the top.
That's cool. So you can just really streamline what it's doing. That's neat.
Yeah. So thankfully, I've mostly used it in my redesign for special stuff. So that's good.
So just to throw another like wrench in this conversation, what about get posts? Is that just, should you avoid that? Because I use the crap out of that.
Isn't that deprecated?
Get post singular or get?
Get posts plural.
I don't know off the top of my head. I'd have to look it up.
Okay. It's just like it returns an array of posts. It's it's pretty simple, but
But then you can't run like a normal query. You'd have to run like your own custom loop over it, right? I guess.
Yeah, you can kind of do some things with like set up what is it? Permadata or metadata setup data, and there's a way you can make it act like a WordPress loop, but yeah, it's a little bit custom. So anyway, I just
set up the function that sets up all of the data for the post. It gets called, you know, inside the loop. There's that call to
the post. Yeah,
right. A post calls WP query the post, which then ultimately calls setup post data, which is where all the global variables get set.
Interesting. So Matt, in your case, you should be using WP query. For people that are like, let's say you have like an archive.php page, and on your archives you want to show, in your default setting is to show 5 blog posts per page, but in your archive you want to show 10. That might be like a little adjustment that you could probably make by just altering query posts. That's a simple little change, but for querying custom stuff, like it sounds you're doing, WP query sounds like the way to go. Yeah, good enough. Next one.
Cool. Yeah, let's move on. This one's from Arlie McBlain, and they're asking to the WordPress expert, that's you, Alex, do you ever give clients staging and production versions of sites? Do you have tips for dealing with multiple environments for workflow? Is the answer to that ramp?
Well, there's a couple different answers, right? One, I mean, we've talked about the content a little bit, but we haven't really talked about the code. So version control is the solution to most of this. Make sure that you're using version control, Subversion or Git. We switched to Git earlier this year, at the beginning of the year, and have loved every minute since. One of the big benefits of Git is branch-driven development, and once you start doing it, it's hard to imagine your life before that. Basically, you create these branches for each feature that you're building, and they can live independently and then get all merged back, and it's a beautiful thing. But where it's really useful with clients is, let's say, you know, you've got maybe a client you have a retainer relationship with, and you know, this month you're building feature X for them. And while you're working on that, they say, oh, hey, I've got this little change that I really need to push up. If you don't have feature X going on in a feature branch, you've got it in your main code base. Now you've got to try to figure out how to get that little change into your version control and pushed up on the site and separate from all the work that is only half-baked for, you know, feature X that you're working on. So branch-driven development solves that problem beautifully. We use the Git flow model, which you can Google. We can put that in the show notes as well. It's really awesome.
It's Google that right now. Git flow.
Yeah, it's just a set of conventions around some general best practices. And there's some additional commands that like you install it and you can do git flow init, and then you can do all of these things like git flow feature start, git flow feature end, and it just wraps a set of base git commands with conventions, which conventions are important when you're working with a team in particular, so that everybody's kind of speaking the same language. So anyways, version control is a very good thing, and that allows you to easily migrate your code from one environment to the other, because you can say, okay, I want to take this version of the code and stick it on this server. We've also started doing quite a bit of work with Capistrano, which is a Ruby framework for automation. And so we've got tools.
Cap deploy.
Yes. So the first thing we built was an internal tool to help us get local development environments set up quickly, because we might need to bring in, say, a front-end developer to do some visual cleanup work on something, and it's going to take them, you know, a couple hours to do it. We don't want it to take them 3 or 4 hours to just set up the environment to do those couple hours of work. So now we've basically got a script that says, you know, for each project, there's a configuration that says, this is the fixtures database, this is the Git repository, and it has a few different settings, and it knows how to pull all that stuff down, set it up locally, and boom, you're ready to go, right? And now we're doing the same thing with WordPress upgrades, deployments on client sites, and things like that, which makes it really easy to do like big upgrades with virtually zero downtime.
Nice, nice. Yeah, we use Capistrano at CodePen too. It's great. Okay, good stuff. We got a ramp one. Let's do it. Or this is, I don't even know if it is. I just assume that it is. Flo has a question here. Traditionally, larger companies, I'm not talking about media or business-to-consumer website, but more business-to-business websites here, fail to see WordPress as a viable option for their content management. Ramps, staging, production environments. Okay, it's the word, isn't it? Staging and production environments. Selective. Okay. Ramps, staging, and production environments, comma, selective change rollout and rollback make it easy to publish in an efficient and professional way, bringing WordPress closer to more conventional web design and development process. Are you noticing a shift in mentality as more and more interest from larger business-to-business corps since you launched Ramp? Yeah, I guess the shift in mentality is the question, I guess. Sorry if that was a... I don't know. I guess slightly weird question, but maybe you got more out of it than I did.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a chicken and egg situation. I mean, we ended up building Ramp because we saw this problem, and we had a client that was willing to pay for a little bit of the development. And then since we've released it, you know, now that's a solution that's available to people, and they come to us wanting to use it or wanting to extend it or help it, you know, enable that type of workflow for WordPress. But we've been building, you know, I think the first really big site I built on WordPress was the All Things D project, and that was back in early 2007.
Wow. So they still use it, kind of?
Yeah. All Things D is listed on WordPress.com, and yeah, my friend that I built it with still helps him maintain it.
Awesome.
Cool.
Dang.
I mean, would you say in general WordPress is getting enterprisier as it gains, you know, so much more market share and attention?
I think that it's becoming more capable, and I think that the word of mouth is spreading. So I think that it's growing in all areas, and the enterprise is one of those. I don't think that the enterprise is targeted any more than any other area. I think it's just the growth is reaching into that space as well.
Cool. Oh, sorry. I shouldn't have said enterprise. Now I'm thinking about Star Trek really in depth. I started myself on my own little rabbit hole there. It's just interesting how it's growing. I'm encouraged. So, Chris, you got another question?
I want to do a sponsor for Environments for Humans, our longtime best sponsors. Oh, can we just hug Environments for Humans? What's that?
Hold on 1 second. Hold on.
I'm holding.
I'm wearing a little grass skirt.
You guys, I have already purchased coconut bras. They're sitting on my countertop right now. I wasn't going to pay exorbitant Hawaii Honolulu prices for coconut bras. I got them on Amazon for $2.50 each. I'm talking, of course, about going to the In Control Conference. Go to incontrolconference.com. I love that you're continuing to play. This is the best. It's in Honolulu, Hawaii. It's an amazing conference with tons of great speakers at it, including me. And Jessica Hish and Daniel Burka. And then there's the CSSDevConf.com that runs back-to-back with it, where Dan Cederholm's going to be there. Dave Rupert, you know that guy? He's a really good ukulele player. Anyway, Dave sent me a picture this early. It's hard for me to even talk, but Environments for Humans, which I've learned how to spell the word environment very well lately since they sponsor. So it's environment. Right, it's not environment. I misspell it all the time. But Environments for Humans, they're a great sponsor. It's a real face-to-face conference, they call it, in Honolulu, Hawaii, with some of the best and the best in the thing. And we want to see you all there. I know some of you we've convinced to buy tickets and come hang out with us in early December in Honolulu, Hawaii. I hope to see a lot of you there. It's going to be awesome. So thanks for sponsoring, and see you in Hawaii. All right, let's do another one from Damon. Mama.
So Damon wrote in. He said, how do you get started when you're theming a WordPress site? Do you have a base theme you tend to work from? Is it one you made yourself or adapted from one of the bajillion blank themes out there? I like that. That's funny. Are there any boilerplate themes you would recommend as being particularly unobtrusive or semantic? Alex, do you have a favorite boilerplate you use, or do you just code straight from scratch?
We've been maintaining and creating one based on our Carrington core framework. That's on our GitHub, github.com/crowdfavorite.
Open source. What's up?
Yep. I think it's under maybe WP Carrington blueprint. And the Carrington framework is, very much a tool for creating websites, not for creating WordPress themes. I'd say that that's kind of the big difference between like a parent theme as a framework versus and kind of some of the other commercial, you know, theme frameworks out there versus what Carrington Core is. Carrington Core is just a template selection engine that allows you to use naming conventions instead of conditional code in your theme. So that is super valuable for us. It's something that we created again based on need we're seeing with our clients. In particular, like building a site once, you can get away with just about anything. But if you're maintaining a site over time and responding to a bunch of customization requests and things like that, over time, that theme can get really bloated with a bunch of conditional statements. Like, if it's a featured post, do this. And if it's by this author, do this. And you've got all this stuff in the main loop, and they've maybe got stuff in the header and the sidebar and all this conditional logic that has to get maintained. And pretty soon you're creating, you know, you go to fix something and you create a bug somewhere else because you didn't realize the way stuff. Anyways, I'm kind of going down this rabbit hole, but it's the goal with Core was let's get rid of most of that code, abstract it out, because it's the same stuff we're writing over and over again, right? And that's what a framework is for. It's to replace that stuff doing over and over again. So instead, you've got these simple directories with nice, clean file names like, cat-news.php, and it gets picked up if it's, you know, in the news category, or user-jsmith, and if it was written by John Smith, it gets picked up. So you end up with a proliferation of template files that are clean and easier to maintain compared to, you know, the type of spaghetti logic that happens based on independent, unrelated requests over 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, where, you know, nobody can, you can't foresee what's going to happen there. So it makes it really hard to write clean code in those situations. So anyways, Carrington Blueprint is a Carrington Core-based kind of very much, you know, skeleton theme.
Yeah, right on. So that's like the root. That's what you use to kind of develop new sites because of the power that it gives you, right?
Right. Yeah. All the Carrington Core stuff is free open source on our GitHub as well.
Awesome. And if you need help with it, you should just hire a crowd favorite. They'll help you. the general question was about frameworks at all, and it, you know, like the, I'm sure that's an awesome one. I haven't actually used it yet. It'd be pretty fun to play around with it though. But there is that _me one that we talked about during the Matt episode. That automatic people have been worked on, but a lot of outside of automatic people have worked on it too. But it's also kind of a starter theme, less of a framework maybe, but more of like I'm developing a new site and just kind of want a blank slate to work with some best practices in it. That would be one place you could look as well.
Yeah, the first one that we did was for Carrington was called Carrington Jam. It was back in the Blueprint had an updated version of that.
Oops, cutting out just a little bit there.
It's great to see so many of these things out there because I think that starting from a good base and kind of building from scratch is a lot more interesting than trying to build 18 features into a core theme thing and then only using 3 or 4 of them. It becomes a lot of bloat.
Right on.
Cool.
Bill Hernandez, we got time for one or two more. Hey, right. Bill Hernandez asks, what is your take on the Akismet plugin for WordPress? Is this really necessary for small business websites on a budget? The reason I ask is because it costs money. Also, are there any other free alternatives? This is kind of, I put this in here because I'm like, that's weird because there is some kind of business model for Akismet, right? But I use it on CSS Tricks and like, maybe I'm like breaking the law or something, but I don't believe I've paid for it. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, if you use it on a commercial site, you're supposed to get a commercial key from Automatic. Alternatives would be, you know, other comment systems like Discuss or things like that. I think it was Matt that coined the definition of social software as things that get spammed. And if you're allowing user-generated content like comments, you're definitely opening yourself up for that. So some type of protection is a good idea.
Yeah, certainly. Unless you like don't have comments, and then it doesn't matter. So just in case anybody's wondering what this is all about, it's kind of like if you have an open comment form, or you use something like BB Press, right, or Buddy Press, where it's like it may not be a comment form, but it might be threads in a forums or something. It will like check to see that the thing that's being posted looks good or not, and if it's bad, it kind of gets marked as spam, so you can check it out. Right. So if you don't have anything like that, you don't need Akismet. But if you do, check it out. And I'm going to, looks like the pro plan is the one that I need, I guess. That's weird that I have maybe it wasn't always like this. I've just had Akismet running forever and I didn't even know that it costed money. So I don't know how I could get in trouble for that. But I might just sign up for the pro license. It's $5 a month.
It looks like it's donationware at the blog, personal blog level. Perhaps you are
the site makes money, so, right.
Yeah, well, that's cheap for how much it blocks.
Oh, yeah, huge.
Yeah.
The more you know. Let's do one more and call it a day. How about that?
Yeah, sounds good. So we have let's do that audio question from Chad. Does that sound good?
Sure.
Okay, let me pull that up. Here we go.
This is Chad Warner from Holland, Michigan. Sometimes my clients want me to hide the page titles in WordPress. I could prevent them from being generated by the PHP in the theme's template file, but I've been told it's better for SEO to keep them and simply hide them with CSS. Is this true? If so, is it better to use display none, text indent, or some other method? I'm a big fan of the show, so keep it up.
Ooh. Hiding title tags for SEO. Anyone? Alex?
this
strategy.
SEO is not my bag.
Well, so it depends on if there's anything in those titles worth having, I guess. It seems a little shady to me to be like, well, we don't want to show them on our site, but we want some weird SEO value from having them but kicked off the page. It seems like those two things are weirdly at odds with each other. And if they're useful for SEO, that means they're probably useful content too. And if they're not useful content, then they probably should just not be on the page. Like, hiding them just because you think they get SEO value screams a little bit like putting, like, white-on-white text at the bottom of the page that's like, you know, Britney Spears, sneakers, Nike, or something. So I would avoid that. Like, if there's value in that title, just show it. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, man. And you know what? If you're using, like, CSS image replacement or whatever and kicking it off the page with CSS, I'm pretty much telling you that that's not a big deal. I don't care what anybody says. I think you can do that all day. What if you wanted to – well, how would you approach having a template in WordPress that where you the most efficient possible way you would be able to show or not show the title? Like, how would you approach something that at CrowdFavorite? Would it be part of your, like, framework or whatever? Like, maybe make a post meta box with a checkbox in it that says hide title, or use a custom field, or use a totally separate template that you select? You know, like, there's so many different ways you could approach that, right? Is there, like, one good way?
A custom field would make sense because you're not ever going to be querying by that data. So basically, there's two ways of attaching metadata to a post. One is through a taxonomy, like a custom taxonomy, and one is through the custom fields. And if you have to search by whatever the parameter is, like, you know, I've got a page where I want to show all of the posts that have this attribute, then you want to use a taxonomy because the database structure of that data is better for querying, whereas if you are only storing the information for decoration purposes, like I want to change the way this post looks, I want to add a frill here, I want to remove the title, I want to do things like that based on this meta value, then the post meta is a great place to store that.
Awesome. So you can query by metadata or by custom fields. It's just really expensive and difficult and stuff, right? Or is that true? Or,
yeah, it's a key value table. So there's an index on the key column, but the value column is a long text field which can't be indexed. So if you're searching on the value of some piece of meta, you're doing it wrong because at scale, that's going. It basically has to do like a table scan. It's there's no way to make that efficient.
Very interesting to know. So if you need to query, you probably wouldn't ever need to run a query on show me all posts that have the page title hidden. And if you did need to write that query, it would just be like for your own like internal purposes. It probably wouldn't be something that you need for the work of the site. Anyway, that's good. I learned a lot from this episode. Let's wind things down. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, that sounds good. Alex, hey, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and coming on the show. How can people follow you, buy your stuff, give you money, and do all that?
My site, alexking.org. I'm alexkingorg on Twitter. CrowdFavorite is at crowdfavorite.com and at crowdfavorite on Twitter.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And of course, always thanks everyone for listening in the chat room. We really appreciate you guys coming out. And rate us up in iTunes. Follow us at Shop Talk Show on Twitter for all the latest updates on news and hot drama. Actually, we don't do any of that. That's all. Anyway, Chris, you want to take us out?
ShopTalkShow.com.